Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to this week's episode of Just Us Talks with Tisha. I am Tisha Hillman. I am a Maryland-based attorney practicing in the areas of family law, personal injury, and criminal law. So if you have any questions about any of those issues, feel free to give my office a call. We would love to do our best to help you in your situation. We can be reached at 301-744-7996. Please be sure to follow us on Twitter as well as to like us on Facebook. And if you want to visit our website, it is www.tshillmanlaw.com. And my marketing guy, shout out to Gatewood Marketing, for updating my website and making it look absolutely amazing. So I want to talk about a couple of things, but before we get into the details of what I wanted to discuss today, which is in the area of personal injury, I wanted to talk about, again, some of the things that are going on in this country. I usually start my shows by talking about current events, politics, and just issues around justice, because I became an attorney because I am absolutely committed to equality and justice. And if you've been paying attention at all, you know that there have been an upsurge in hate-based crimes, specifically around as well as Muslims. And over the past week, there was a young Muslim girl, 17 years old, who had just left mosque, and she was accosted by a white man with a bat. And she was, I believe she was raped and beaten to death. And I am absolutely disgusted. But if you have listened to my show at all, you know that I am not at all a supporter of the current president nor his administration because of their hate mongering, not only as it relates to black people, but people of color in general, as well as Muslims. And so I absolutely blame this president and this administration for what's happening in this country. I absolutely blame them for the death of that young woman because things like this could absolutely be prevented. But when you have a president whose entire platform was ran on separating people based on race and class and gender, you have issues like this. And, you know, when you have a president who during his campaign events would say things like, you know, I wish I could punch him in the face, and mocking the disabled and admitting to sexual advances on women and being sued by several women and then subsequently paying them off to go away. It's absolutely disgusting. And I can't believe that this is the place that we are in this country in 2017. I say enough about it because it seems like every day there is another hate crime. You know, there have been repeated instances where nooses have been found at various places, including the new African American History Museum here in Washington, D.C. There has certainly been an uptick in KKK rallies and marches and things like that. And the thing about that, I mean, there are many things about that that disgust me. I mean, I completely understand the Constitution, and I understand that the KKK has a First Amendment right to say the hateful and awful things that they say should not be free from consequences. And people don't understand that, is that while you do have a First Amendment right to say whatever it is that you want to say, you do not have a right to be protected from consequences of that hate speech. And so the thing that has absolutely flabbergasted me for a very long time is that the KKK is still not labeled a hate group or a terrorist organization as well, and they should be, because, you know, during the 50s and 60s, they terrorized black communities, killing many, many people. And so, you know, on one end, you have Muslim extremists who should certainly not be labeled as typical of the Muslim religion in general. But on the very other side of that, you have white extremists, white Christian, quote-unquote, extremists, who are slaughtering people, have a history of slaughtering people, and they are still not labeled as terrorist organizations. And I certainly have my beliefs about that. And if you ever listen to my show, you know that I talk a lot about white supremacy, because it is the underlying thing that allows this type of, and the way that justice is doled out for people of color and for white people, that allows hatred, racial hatred specifically, to thrive. Because until this country deals with white supremacy and deals with the issues that white supremacy causes, right, we will never be able to really have equality. And I always question whether or not this country actually wants equality, because if you look at some of the things that have happened in terms of legislation and, you know, all of the things that are going on in Congress, things that happen behind closed doors, the fact that the KKK and the alt-right movement, whatever that means, came out in full support of this president, and somehow that did not disqualify him. And so now we've gotten to the place in this country where overt racism has now been normalized. It's now mainstream. You know, there's no going back, folks. This is where we are. And so how do we deal with that? And so until we tackle the issue of white supremacy, we will never get to that place of true equality. Another thing that happened this week that I believe that was substantial and of substantial import was the dashboard camera of the Philando Castile shooting. And I absolutely refuse to watch it because I think one of the things that happens when black people are killed by law enforcement is that not only is there never any justice, you know, rarely is there an arrest, rarely is there prosecution, but if there happens to be that random incident where there is prosecution, so far, 100% of the time, it's always been a justified shooting. And the thing about the Philando Castile shooting that has me absolutely, I mean, again, there are many things about this. First and foremost, the man was stopped for no legal reason, saying right. And if you ever read the comment section, which is basically, you know, a bastion of hate speech, but if you ever read the comment sections on any social media post when there's a shooting, you always have police apologists and people who will come out and say, well, if he or she would have done X, or if he or she would not have done X, they would not have been shot. And I can go on and on and on when there's instances that that's certainly not the case. And many of them, that's not the case. But when it comes to black lives, this is why we say Black Lives Matter, because this country has shown over and over to black people that black lives don't matter. And that is why the Black Lives Matter movement was started in the first place. Just wanting to have this country recognize the fact that we are people too, that black lives matter too. Stop killing us because our lives matter too. They say that police just want to go home to their families. These people just wanted to go home to their families. But, you know, you'll have situation after situation. And what these verdicts say when there is no justice is that Black lives don't matter. And so, you know, I'm absolutely appalled by the so-called All Lives Matter movement, because they never come out and actually support these types of situations. And I know that the All Lives Matter movement, or whatever it is, was only, you know, started as a distraction and as a ploy to basically silence the Black Lives Matter movement. Because what has happened is that it's been shown repeatedly that there's seemingly nothing that a Black person in this country can do to avoid being shot by law enforcement. And in the Philando Castillo case, not only was he stopped for no legal cause, his 4-year-old daughter was in the car. His girlfriend or fiance, whatever, his partner was in the car. And the fact that she felt that she needed to live stream this incident, their lives, and yet he still ended up dead, is a problem. The fact that this man was executed in the presence of his loved ones, specifically his 4-year-old daughter, is disgusting. Because I was talking to a friend of mine last night when a couple of years ago, two white journalists were shot on the air. And the media did not show the shooting because they did not want to basically traumatize the victim's family. Black lives. They can air the graphic details of a Black person and their blood spilling into the street. They can show that over and over and over. But somehow, we are not supposed to be traumatized by this. Somehow, our families are not supposed to be protected from the graphic imagery of our loved ones' blood spilling into the street. And, you know, I can say so many things about that. But the fact that Mr. Castile did not have a criminal history, so you can't use that excuse. Oh, that, you know, he may have smoked weed one day in his life. Can't use that as an excuse, right? He told the officer that he was a registered gun owner and that he was in possession of a handgun. The officer asked for his ID, and when Mr. Castile reached for his identification, the officer shot him 5 times. What did he do wrong? What could Mr. Castile have done to prevent his own death, right? And somehow when it comes to Black lives, apologist, there's always someone to excuse the behavior of the victimizers and then somehow the blame is placed on the victim. The victims are always blamed for their own death. And, you know, what it reminds me of is when women are raped or sexually assaulted, right? You know, well, what was she wearing? Was she drinking? What was she doing? Was she behaving this way, right? Because what that does is say, well, if she would not have done X, maybe she would not have been raped. The country has a real problem when it comes to the victimization of women and the victimization of Black people and the victimization of Muslim people. This country has a problem. And until that issue is addressed, these types of things will continue to happen. And my fear is we are going to get to a place in this country where people are going to start shooting back, because people are being tired of having their loved ones be murdered with no justice. And people always want to bring up this this so-called issue of black-on-black crime. And the problem with that is black-on-black crime is not a thing, right? Because we don't say white-on-white crime or Jewish person on Jewish person crime. We don't say those things, right? And so it's an absurd to blame the victim and to call attention to something that doesn't really exist, because it's called proximity, folks. Because, you know, usually people harm those that are in close proximity to them. And so when you focus on only the fact that there is violence in Black communities while ignoring that there's also violence in white communities, the issue really boils down to poverty, right? People, if poverty causes crime. I studied criminal justice in undergrad. And, you know, of course, there's all these scholars and, you know, people who have, you know, written all sorts of, you know, all sorts of writings of what is it that causes crime? And, you know, folks, I am of the firm belief that it's poverty, that it's a lack that causes crime. But, you know, I could go on and on and on about this issue because it's so prevalent in our society. And it's really disheartening because I think what is often overlooked is something that I usually refer to as Black PTSD. You know, all of these shootings without justice really plays on your psyche. Because the question that we have to ask as Black, and when you look at Philando Castile, the only thing that I can say is, I don't know. And I wish I knew. But, you know, I want to talk about personal injury. So when it comes to the issue of, or the area, I should say, of personal injury, there are a lot of things that encompass personal injury cases. But what I want to talk today about is something that actually someone asked me the other day, to look into this issue of basically premise liability. And essentially, premise liability is about, you know, you go to a business, you slip, you fall. What happens when that occurs? You know, what sort of action can be brought in such a case? And so it's important to know that when you are on the land of another, and if you are a landowner, you have a duty. And so it all boils down to negligence, to know that when it comes to negligence, there are four very, very important factors in order to really examine and to prove a negligence case. And the plaintiff has to prove, first and foremost, that the defendant was under a duty to protect the plaintiff from the injury. Second, that the defendant breached that duty in some way. Third, that the plaintiff suffered some kind of damages, some kind of loss or injury as a result of the negligence of, you know, or the breach of duty. Finally, that the loss or injury resulted in some kind of damages, and that the defendant's actions were the proximate cause, and their breach of duty was the proximate cause of the injuries of the plaintiff, right? And so the first thing we really have to examine is, was there a duty, right? Because it's not that there's a duty in all cases. And so when it comes to land, generally speaking, a landowner, you invite somebody to your property, you generally have, there's a general duty to protect the person from known dangers. And so it's basically, it's either dangers that the landowner knew or should have known could potentially cause harm. And so the next thing is the breach of the duty. And so it's like, what was it? What were the actions of the defendant that caused the injuries of the plaintiff, right? What was it? How was it that the duty? And now the question that I was asked is a very interesting question, because it's that of the third party. Do the landowners have a duty to protect their invitees, right, the people that are on their premises for business purposes? Does that landowner have a duty to protect the invitee from the intentional behavior, either criminal or negligent action, of a third party. So say, for instance, I'm at a party, right? And the party is at, I don't know, like a hotel, right? You're at a party at a hotel, a fight breaks out, and someone ends up being shot. Does that landowner actually have an obligation? Can you sue the landowner for the actions of a third party? And we have to examine all of these things under the scope of whether or not the landowner owed a duty. To whom, how far does that duty extend? Does that duty from the landowner to the invitee then extend to a third person? And did the landowner breach that duty by virtue of the actions of the third party? And so basically what Maryland case law has stated is that you have to look at, and one of the main ones is the foreseeability of harm. And if whether or not the defendant was able to foresee the consequences of what occurred, right? Did something happen previously, right? So is it a known issue that, say, maybe, maybe a light is out or a door to the premises is always unlocked, and so third parties can always enter the location and cause harm to the people that are there for business purposes. So it's that type of stuff. What is the level of foreseeability that the defendant had that maybe could have prevented the plaintiff's action? And so then we also have to look at basically the degree of certainty that the plaintiff would have suffered an injury. And what is the connection between the defendant's conduct and the injury that was suffered? So if the defendant actually owed a duty to the plaintiff to protect the plaintiff from harm based on the actions of a third person, is there a connection? What is the proximate cause between the defendant, say, well, let's use the door open, the unlocked door situation? What is the closeness and proximity between the door being unlocked, the harm that was suffered to the plaintiff, right? And then what's any kind of moral blame that can be attached to the defendant's conduct? And is there any way to prevent future harm, right? What is the extent of the burden that the defendant has and the consequences of imposing a duty of care resulting from the breach of the defendant's duty? And so we have to look at all of these things. And folks, you got to understand that it's these types of cases are never black and white, because what it boils down to is facts and circumstances. And so the finder of fact is going to look at the totality of the circumstances. And this is where details become very, very important. So if you have a potential personal injury case and you want to talk to an attorney about it, make sure that you go over the details with them as much as you can, because sometimes people will leak out details that they may believe that are seemingly innocuous, but one little detail, one little fact can change the outcome of your case. So you want to make sure that not only are you being forthcoming and truthful about the things that occurred, even if you believe that those things may make you look bad, you want to make sure that you give your attorney all of the information so that they can really thoroughly examine, the potential causes of action that you may have. And so Maryland case law has basically stated that even though something is foreseeable, and foreseeability, as I just stated, is a very important factor, the fact that something was foreseeable doesn't necessarily, in and of itself, establish a duty. And so there's a general rule that there is no duty to protect a victim from the criminal acts of a third party in absence of a statute, a contract, or relationship between the party in question and the third party. And the question really boils down to that duty. And again, because like I stated, that is the general rule, it applies even though the party in question had actual knowledge that the harm was imminent, or that the party had knowledge of facts that made the harm foreseeable. Because like I stated, the fact that it's foreseeable in and of itself does not then establish a duty. We have to really establish proximate cause. And it really boils down to, like I said, there's no general rule, but is there a contract between the parties which makes it or could make it a duty? Is there a statute or is there some other relationship that can then establish a duty? Because the general rule is going to hold, but for those exceptions. So the next thing you want to look at is, what are any damages that may have been suffered? And sometimes damages are nominal, meaning, you know, it's not really a huge monetary value. But you really got to look at whether or not the plaintiff had to, you know, undergo any sort of medical treatment, whether it may be, you know, psychological or, you know, just having to go see a physician or whatever the case may be as a result of the injuries that were brought on. And then the next thing is the issue of damages themselves, because in Maryland, there's several types of damages that may be available, and there's something called compensatory damages, and that really means that the sum of money that will basically make the injured party whole. And that's obviously as a result of any damages or injuries that they may have sustained. And so then there are general compensatory damages, which are basically those damages that are the result of any action that could basically be necessarily logical. So, you think about it in the sense of those damages that would be expected as a result of this type of situation. Then there are special damages, special compensatory damages. And when it comes to special damages, those are arise from a tort, but they may not necessarily be found in every single case. So again, like I stated, it really is a fact-specific type of situation, because when it comes to special damages, it could be something like bills, like medical bills, dental bills, psychiatric bills, transportation to and from medical treatment, and special damages are basically those that naturally flow as a consequence of the act. And so you also then have punitive damages. And punitive damages are just like they sound. They are designed to punish the tortfeasor's tortious conduct. And so you have to have damages, actual damages, in order to prove negligence. And you got to have a proximate cause. So before you want to go out and sue someone, you got to make sure that you can actually prove a case for negligence. If you have any questions about personal injury, family law, criminal law, be sure to contact the law office of Tisha S. Holman, 301-744-7996. And until next week, folks, take care, be safe, know your rights. Have a good one.